I do believe that work shouldn't be a place where we have to suffer at all. It should be a place of renewal in a weird way, growth, development, and you can have it all. If you're the CEO of a company listening to this, you can have it all. You can have great profit, really happy people, and amazingly satisfied customers.
What is up, everybody? This is Paul Critchley. I'm the president of New England Lean Consulting. Welcome to the season 2 finale episode of the New England Lean podcast. First and foremost, thank you all listeners who have tuned into this, help share this on social media, LinkedIn, Twitter, even Instagram. Thank you so much. I definitely appreciate it. What started out as just kind of a fun COVID project is now kind of grown. We're in, I think the last time I counted, we're listened in 27, I think, different countries. You know, hundreds, and maybe I got to go back and look. I should have looked before I started recording. We might be into the thousands of downloads. I don't know. If not, it's pretty close. So thank you all very much. And also thank you to all of our guests. Here in season 2, I was going back through some numbers. With all the guests that we had on this season, all those folks put together have written 22 books, and which I think was pretty impressive. I didn't even realize it, you know, when I was kind of setting all these interviews up. You know, and really, and I'm going to humble brag just for a quick sec. I'm really proud of the folks that we've had on, because, you know, one of the things I really wanted to stress with this show wasn't just, you know, interviewing, you know, I don't want to call it an interview because it's not my format. I really just want it to be a discussion where you all, the listeners, can really get to know some of these folks, because I get it. It can be kind of intimidating. Like if you see, for instance, Art Bird, who I have a lot of respect for and I've met in person, and he's a super nice guy, but you think it's like, especially here in Connecticut, it's like, geez, that's Art Byrne. You know, everybody knows the Wildermold story if you're in engineering or lean community here in Connecticut or, you know, regionally. I mean, forget about internationally. I mean, the guy obviously has a pretty big following. So I get it that people can sometimes be a little intimidated. So I really wanted to help bridge that gap. So you really get to know folks, because again, I think we're just all people. We're just all trying to do the best that we can. And, you know, sometimes people will write a book cause they have an idea or something to share. So I want to bring that piece of it, you know, kind of to the forefront. And I hope, that I'm able to do that, you know, and I'm looking at our list right now on the computer screen. We've had a former Marine, state trooper, people that work in lean and higher education. You know, we had a cancer survivor and author on the show and talked about that journey. We had Kevin Meyer on, who wrote The Simple Leader, which is one of my favorite books, period, let alone even calling it a lean book. John Dyer, who's a very good personal friend of mine, somebody I have a lot of respect for, and I've told the story, retell it real quickly. John taught me how to do problem solving before I even knew him, because we both worked at Ingersoll Rand. He helped write the problem solving handbook that my company used that hired me. So, and I still have a copy of it. And I happened to be thumbing through it the other day because it came up on a Lean Happy Hour. And lo and behold, John Dyer helped write it, which I thought was kind of a funny way to close that loop. Panos Efsta, again, somebody I consider a friend, came to the United States with basically the clothes on his back. And, you know, talked about that with us in his episode. And he's a strong lean believer. And he's, you know, he's a good person doing good work. So I just honestly, I can't say thank you enough to you, the listeners, and to all of our guests. So just real quick, I did say it's the season finale, which it is. We are 100% going to be back for a season 3. It's probably going to be right around Labor Day. Now that COVID is, I won't say over, but waning, you know, and things are obviously opening back up, we're actually going to be able to take a family vacation this year. So I have to put some mental energy into that and helping plan and you know, all that kind of stuff. And I'll say air quotes, get back to normal. So we just have a little bit of going on. Plus, I do want to retool a little tiny bit, just add a few things now that I've been at this for a couple of years now to make the show even better. And I already have, I'm looking at the list of guests on my whiteboard. So I'm already working on getting folks lined up for that. So please stay subscribed. I will share some bonus episode kind of stuff that I've been toying around with over the summer. So I'm not just going to go dark on you. So be on the lookout for that. So there. All right. So let's get to this episode. I can't think of a better guest to have for the season finale other than Karen Martin. Karen is the president of the global consulting firm TKMG Incorporated, and she's the president and founder of TKMG Academy, which is something that she just launched, I think, about a year or so ago. Karen is a leading authority on business performance improvement, problem solving, and lean management systems. She's a two-time Shingo Award-winning author, the outstanding organization and co-author of Value Stream Mapping, which I have copies of both, and co-author of two other titles on business performance improvement. Her latest book, Clarity First, which I think came out about a year or so ago, was a finalist for 800 CEO Reads Business Book of the Year. And that's one of those books where it's sort of a lean book. If you're a lean practitioner, you can definitely read the thread kind of through it. But you don't have to be into lean at all to read that and glean from it. Like our guest last week, Dan Horowitz, he wrote a book, Help Them Up. Again, same thing. You don't have to be in lean or engineering or anything. You know, it's just really about leadership of people caring about people. So if you haven't read either of those, I would strongly recommend going and picking up copies and make it your beach read for the summer. As always, I hope you enjoy it, and I hope you get something out of it. Make it a great week. Have a great summer. Get some R&R in, and we'll see you real soon. Thanks, everybody. So welcome to the New England Lean Podcast and the season finale of season two with our guest, Karen Martin. Karen, hello.
Hello. Nice to be here. Season finale.
Woohoo.
Woohoo.
So good. I didn't job. Get any balloons or anything. I don't know. I'll edit them in later.
I'll do confetti.
Nice. So thanks again for agreeing. I know we kind of been chatting a little bit, trying to find a good time to have you on. I'm like, you know what? I think Karen would be a great guest to have as the stake in the ground for the end of the season. So
well,
here we go.
Thank you. Glad to be the stake.
Yeah. So, you know, I always like to start off, you know, in case somebody doesn't know who you are, and I can't for the life of me imagine that there's anybody left that doesn't, but for somebody that may be listening that doesn't know who you are, can you maybe hum a few bars about who you are, what you're up to?
So hi, my name is Karen Martin. I am a lean practitioner, operational excellence person from way back. And I have two companies. TKMG is our consulting arm, and TKMG Academy is our online learning arm. And I love helping people make improvement. I love helping improvement professionals deepen their skills and their knowledge. And I do believe that work shouldn't be a place where we have to suffer at all. It should be a place of renewal in a weird way, growth, development, and you can have it all. If you're the CEO of a company listening to this, you can have it all. You can have great profit, really happy people, and amazingly satisfied customers.
Nice. Nice. And congrats again. I know TKMG Academy has been around, what, 2 years?
1 year. No, 1 year.
Just one.
Passed our 1 year and 1 month.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So talk a little bit about that. I know that was a big deal, and because you and I have known each other, it's, you know, a little bit here for a while. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I know, like I said, it's still pretty new, but like, how did you come up with that idea? And what has it been like to, you know, launch something that's that new to try to fill something that void?
In COVID. During COVID.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, April 2nd, right when COVID was getting rocking and rolling. So I've been thinking about it for sort of a decade, actually, but seriously thinking more 5 years, and then seriously working on it about a year and a half before we launched. You know, I really like quality learning, and I've been watching what's out there for a long time, and I feel like a lot of what people get is only half the story, maybe not as deep as I would like them to get. I also feel like sometimes concepts that are more complex aren't well explained. And I think I have a little bit of a knack of explaining concepts that are pretty complex in a way that people can grasp more easily. And so it actually came from a couple requests that were really loud requests from the marketplace, from little corners of the globe that don't get access to workshops and things like that. And you know, I took them very seriously and decided to do it. And it, you know, I was like, if I don't just do it, I'm not going to do it. So I'm going to do it. So we launched April 2nd last year.
Wow. That's cool. And you're right. I mean, you know, so I watched, I had a little bit of an inside scoop. So I sort of knew what you were up to before you launched. So I was very curious to see, and I'd be kind of keeping an eye, and I think it's great. So congrats again.
Thank you. It's been fun. It's a lot of work, but it's well worth it.
But cause I think you're right. I mean, you know, like for instance, and I can relate a little bit, although it was nowhere near the undertaking you did, where we launched a lean certification program sort of for the same reason, because, you know, if you Google it, it's, you know, you can do anything. I joke, but it's only half a joke. I get Groupon notifications that I can get lean certified from some online place for like $99. And it's like, it's obviously it's garbage. I'll say it's garbage because it is. I mean, it's like a, you know, 2 hour thing or some ridiculous thing, but the injury, you know, and we see this online sometimes, right? Where people talk about certifications and whether it's worth it or not, but kind of what we were going after was to try to fill the void between the online stuff, which some of it's very good, you know, AME, SME, Shingo, right? They have their versions. I think those are pretty good. And then there's other ones like the Groupon one, which obviously is no bueno. And then there's still other ones that you can do in person, but like you just said with COVID, it's like, it blows everything up. So same thing. So I guess what I'm trying to get to is, you know, cause Lean's been around for a long time, even though, right, the term came in 88. I feel like, especially with COVID, there's got to be something. I mean, the tools and techniques and methods, those are probably never going to change, but it's like the delivery method. And like you said, I want to ask you, you know, talk a little bit more about the delivery piece, because I feel like that's really the key, because anybody can read, you know, watch a YouTube video about 5S and kind of sort of get it. Yeah. But it's like, you need that little extra. So how did you do that part?
Yeah, there were so many considerations. So first of all, just one interesting thing about learning in general, there is so much free content out there that we're competing against free. So that's the first thing when it comes to pricing a product and things like that, you're competing against free. And unfortunately, if people are seeking learning, they often don't know the content yet. So they don't know that what they're getting that's for free is not great content. And so you're competing against that unknown as well. So I think that's a challenge. I think learning has gotten commoditized. It, you know, it's very inexpensive when you do pay for it. And so you have to, you know, figure out a way to do it that's, you know, price sensitive. Now, I did not go price sensitive. So, I mean, the price is low, but the production costs are quite high. So we decided to do a combination of animation and on-screen with instructor. So it's just filmed, you know, in a studio. We're not in front of a live audience. There's not an interactive Q&A. We curate the content for months and months before we write the courses, and then we record them. And then the process is we, you know, edit it, get a rough cut, and then we start designing the animation to visually make the points more poignant, especially for non-native English speakers. The visuals really help a lot. And it just helps learning in general. I have a master's in adult learning, so I learned a lot about how adults learn and how visuals do help, or they distract in many cases. So that's part of it. And then it goes through our motion guy who turns the art into motion. And then we're able to launch. So it's, you know, it's painstaking. The science behind figuring out what to include and exclude in the content so that you're not overwhelming, but you're giving the full picture. The actual editing and deciding what to cut and leave on the floor, as it were, because it doesn't hang as nicely as you'd like. It's quite a process, but I'm very happy. If you're looking for cognitive learning, because ours don't have projects yet, I'm all about application, but we wanted to first get good cognitive learning out there, you know, just learning and understanding, and then we'll move into application, because that's where people really learn is when they're applying. And right. So that's coming up.
Nice. Well, I get it. I mean, like I said, I give you so much credit, because not only did you do that, right, during COVID, how many books are you up to? Three,
five.
Two?
Five.
Five?
So, yeah, in my spare time.
I'm like, what do you work in your sleep? How do you do all this stuff?
Yeah, I work a lot.
Yeah.
But I love it. I'm very passionate about making work a better place for people, and also having it be financially rewarding for shareholders and things like that. And I do believe you can have it all. I've seen it. So yeah, I love it. I'm just so happy and blessed to be in this career.
Nice. Yeah. So that's the other thing I wanted to definitely touch upon, and then we can just basically see where it goes. But I wanted to see if you could share a story. You know, and you could change names or whatever, but so, cause I know you've been doing this for a while. Like you said, you have five books and you have all like a lot of online learning with the Academy. You've got to have a story of just that where, you know, cause we see it a lot where people talk about lean transformation and like, you know, and then you see it devolve in online. Like, what does that even mean? And how do you, what's a KPI for whether we're there or not? Mm-hmm. So when you say you can have it all, mm-hmm. Can you, one, I guess, explain what you mean by that? And then two, give us an example of something that you've seen happen, or maybe a client that you've helped get through something like that.
Yeah. So I actually am going to give an example from this morning, because this is not one where there's enough put together yet where they're getting the financial impact of what we're doing with them, but they will. I mean, it's going to be easy to get the financials, but this particular client, and this happens actually with a lot of clients. We get in, we start sniffing around, we start seeing where there are gaps and opportunities to, you know, streamline the operation and get people engaged and, you know, build up the culture a bit and all these things. And it starts with data. So we ask for data and we get data, and it's dirty, it's incomplete, it's redundant, it's this, it's that. And then we ask for a cleaner version and we get more data, and all of a sudden they've changed the fields and it's different data. And so we ask a lot of questions about data. And interestingly, that opens up all kinds of doors to the unknown that no one person on these teams that we work with has ever really connected all the dots together with the operation. And so this morning we had a 2.5-hour call with a client. And as I was, you know, Jeff on my team and I were co-facilitating this thing. We're asking questions and they kept going, oh. And I mean, something as simple as the ship date. Hmm. On the data set, it said ship date. It wasn't the ship date. It was the planned ship date. And like little things like that where they're making big decisions based on what they think is an actual ship date. And the actual ship dates were actually quite different from the planned ship dates, which as we came to learn. And so things like that, then the CEO was on the call going, what? You know, what? We've been making decisions based on, you know, false data. And so, you know, it's just really interesting to see the ahas and the, you know, writing the book Clarity First. I'm really about clarity. And I love, you know, how data and understanding how bad it can be, you know, opens up this possibility for clarity. And with clarity comes power, because you can make better decisions, and with better decisions comes more money. So, so it's kind of a waterfall. And so as far as, you know, actual transformation, we have another client that was brand new to Lean, and they started, you know, we started sniffing around and started the transformation process and discovered all kinds of customer facing problems that no one had even surfaced, let alone, you know, started to do anything about. And I anticipate that their revenue is going to probably raise by about 30% this year through the work that they're doing, and just the ability to get more work through the pipeline far more quickly. And the employees are just glowing. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, they've never been asked for their opinion on things. They've never been able to participate in actually designing the work that they do and they're the experts in. And so it's just, you know, it's lovely to see that vibe shift from this, you know, kind of downtrodden, like, oh, there's so much stress and it's so much work, to like, ah, you know, work's flowing more easily and we're engaged and customers love us and that type of thing.
Right. And that's where, yeah, I'm right there with you. I mean, I've worked in places where it's like, you know, the best you can hope for is getting an oar by the drum, you know, right. And it's like, that's no way to live. I kick off one of our workshops with a baseline for folks and say, listen, we spend more waking hours together Monday through Friday at work than we do with the people we love the most in this world. So think about that just for a second. Yep. Why does it have to suck?
It doesn't
so bad. Like, yeah. And that's just, it doesn't. So, and it is interesting. I don't know if you share this, but you know, I've been out on my own now full-time 6 years, I guess. And it still surprises me that we have these conversations where people are, you know, will look at you sometimes when you're talking about these things and they're like, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure this is going to work. It's like, mm-hmm. Well, trust me, I've seen it. Like we've done it. Mm-hmm. And it is hard. And I don't know if it's Industrial Revolution leftovers or what. It's like this, we still fight this hierarchy mentality, right?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question and it is very common. I don't know the root cause of it. I mean, I think part of it is when you're in a situation and you've never experienced a different, better situation, it's hard to know, to believe that it exists. You know, the leaders that come into organizations and then, you know, call us up to come and help transform are people who've been in other organizations who know it can happen, or the rare leader that has been reading and just gets it and just knows in every cell of his or her body that this will work. But even they suffer if they haven't really lived it and they just kind of have read and they believe from reading, they will often get cold feet when it gets tough. And we have a situation right now where it's getting tough. It's, you know, transformation's not easy. And if they could perform brilliantly, they'd be performing brilliantly. And so it's getting really tough. And I can tell that they're getting scared and tired. And so you have to figure out what to do with that. Mm-hmm. Psychologically.
Yeah. Our guest, a couple of weeks ago was Adrienne Gill. I think you know her, mm-hmm. right? And she calls that the groan zone, which I love. I've never heard that before.
I never heard that either. I like that too.
It's like, yeah, I get it. You know? And at first I thought, I'm like, are you talking about, you know, Dunning-Kruger, where she's like, no, not that. It's, you know, it's where sometimes I'll refer to it as sugar shock. You know, we'll do a Kaizen or something. Right. Or I'll do training and people are, at 4 o'clock, they're ready to run through brick walls. They're like, let's go do this. I want to do everything right now. Let's go. You know, and then after a while, like you said, you harvest the low hanging fruit. And then it's like, then it really starts to, I won't say grind, but it's a little like, it takes a little bit more effort and you get a little bit less payback. But you and I both know at the end, you keep going and it's right. Everything will open up. But it's hard. It's hard to maintain that perspective.
It is. And it's, you know, if I had a dime for every time I say, you know, what some would say is a trite statement, but I say it a lot, like Rome wasn't built in a day. You know, this is, you know, when you start experiencing the success of transformation, you want more and more, faster, faster, but yet more and more, faster, faster often causes implosion. And so you have to, you know, I think it's a consultant's job to help a client or a strong leader, if it's internally driven, really pace it. Like pacing is so important. And knowing, like I always say, I want to push people to the edge, but never over. Mm-hmm. And so you want to, you know, push them outside of their comfort zone and help them stretch their limits, just like a you know, physical trainer does when you're training for a marathon or whatever. You want to get people there, but never over, because if they go over, then you may never get them back. Mm-hmm. And so it's a delicate dance. So it's transformation's tough.
Yeah. Amen. Right. For sure.
Yep.
So I know your last book, I think it was Clarity First, right? Mm-hmm. And that's how old now?
I forget what year that came out. 18? I think 18.
Okay. That's what I was going to guess, but
yeah, I think 18.
So talk to me a little bit about that. How did you decide? Cause I mean, I'm working on one too, but that's neither here nor there, but how did you come up with, cause I agree with you. I love the context. I love, right. It's clarity first. How did you determine that? Like what data did you pull to say, this is really a problem and I think I got to talk about it?
Yeah, so it actually came from The Outstanding Organization, which was three books ago. And that book is it's based in four different conditions or ways of behaving that I studied all kinds of top performing companies and studied not so top performing companies to see what they were lacking that the others had. And I actually went outside of business as well and looked at athletes and musicians and people that were top at their game, all kinds of different walks of life. And I found that they all had these four common elements of clarity, focus, discipline, and engagement. And when that book came out, I had no idea that the clarity chapter was going to get the kind of reaction it got. I mean, it was almost every email I got was like, whoa, I never thought about clarity. And whoa, I never thought what ambiguity is doing to us in our organization. And then there was this one email that was the email that said, I've got to write a book on clarity. And it was a guy, an engineer that I had known, I worked with at a client, not a guy that shows a lot of emotion, pretty stoic. And he wrote me an email, it was pretty long, and said how much that chapter changed his life and how he actually cried as he was reading the chapter. I don't think he was like sobbing, crying, but it brought tears to his eyes because he finally realized what he was not satisfied with at work and what was dragging his team down and his company down. Mm-hmm. And he thanked me, for writing that chapter. And I was like, wow. And I've always had a thing about the truth. I mean, from the time I was a little kid, I don't know if it's my parents or where it came from, but I was just always seeking the truth and loving the truth, even if it was ugly. And so the clarity and truth kind of, go hand in hand. And so when I decided to write the book on clarity, I thought, oh, easy breezy, one subject, not four. Oh my gosh, I couldn't have been more wrong. I didn't know what I was walking myself into. And clarity, it turns out, is really tricky. And I did all kinds of research from different academics, and there's not a lot written about clarity per se, but there's a whole lot written about tangential elements like certainty, and certainty is not the same thing as clarity, and all those different elements of clarity. So it was a fun book to write. It was a hard book to write. And it's doing really well, I think, because everyone's intrigued with this notion that not having clarity is a source of a whole lot of problems. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. Interpersonal, performance problems, clarity is a good thing.
It gets real messy real quick, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Even in the presence of metrics and goals and KPIs, because, right, you got to understand what's behind those.
Yes. And so this morning, case in point. So we were measuring on-time delivery and they were measuring on-time delivery and they were very happy with our on-time delivery until they learned that ship didn't mean ship. All of a sudden, on-time delivery looks really bad. So clarity, it's the truth hurts, but then you know what you're dealing with and you can do something about it. That's the thing that's beautiful about clarity. Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's, I always say, like, I even tell my kids, or my wife, you can only make a decision based on the information you have right now. Mm-hmm. And to your point, if you get crummy information, you're going to make crummy decisions. Mm-hmm. And the worst thing is you think you're actually making a great decision, especially, mm-hmm. and it's especially difficult if your metrics are telling you you're making the right decision and it's all like smoke and mirrors, right? And you're just way off in left center somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of people, like even my publisher, thought that the book was really a communication book. And it's, at its essence, I suppose it is, but it's not just verbal communication, it's data, it's, understanding the truth behind a problem and what the true root causes are and things like that. So there's lots of elements to clarity. And I also talk about, we're clarity providers or we're information providers and we're information recipients. And so your role in the clarity game is different. Like your role as an information recipient is to make sure you're getting clarity, and your role as a provider is make sure you're delivering with clarity. Mm-hmm. And it's two different parts of the brain. And it takes two different psychological positioning things. Like, in other words, a lot of people don't seek clarity because they're afraid to seek it. And they may be very well, well-grounded. It may be really a safe place for them not to ask for it, because it's not safe to ask for it. And mm-hmm. so it's understandable why someone might not seek clarity in some settings.
Oh, and, sure. Yeah. Right. I'm sorry to cut you off.
Yeah, that's right. But if you get, you know, smacked when you ask for clarity, you're probably not going to ask for clarity much longer.
I was just going to say, and then, you know, and I've talked about it before on this show where I've had those positions where it's like, you know, I've had managers, VPs, directors look right at me like, are you stupid? Is your whole team idiots? And I'm like, no. Like, how am I supposed to answer this question? Like, I understand you're unhappy with what I just told you because the project is behind schedule, but, you know, why are you talking to me like this? Like, this is not okay. And to your point, I would never go back to that and be like, all right, well, so what I hear you saying is blah, blah, blah. Is that correct? You know, it's like that relationship is over with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen tomorrow, next week, next month, next year.
Yeah. A lot of people don't want to hear the truth. And that's a sad, I mean, if you're in the presence, if you're in an organization where organization wide, there's that kind of vibe where people don't want to know the truth, get out. If you're in one part of the organization where maybe a boss, you know, doesn't, I don't like to use that term boss per se, but the person overseeing that work, if he or she doesn't want to hear the truth, you might be able to move around and find a better home. You know, so it's just a matter of whether or not you can control your surroundings to the point where, or find the surroundings, not control them, but find the surroundings that will allow you, you know, to be the clarity seeker you want to be. And to, I mean, to me, delivering information with clarity is actually an act of respect. And, you know, intentional ambiguity is the worst. Mm-hmm. And it's very disrespectful to intentionally cloud messaging. So it's hard though, when you're, and then this guy left his company, the guy that sent the email, he left the company very quickly after he sent that email. Mm-hmm. Because he didn't feel like he could find a place within it, you know, where there was a little clarity pocket, you know?
Yeah.
So,
there's at this one place I'm thinking about in my history, I was I had a bad interaction with some director or some guy, and my boss, who was on the same level, you know, we were kind of debriefing and it was like a manager's meeting. And he's like, well, he's looking at me. He's like, well, why didn't you know, give it right back to him? And before I could answer, another guy jumped in and he's like, well, it's pretty hard to talk back when your teeth are kicked in. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, not for nothing, but this other director is, you know, he's a big dude, West Point graduate. He's physically intimidating. I'm not a big, you know, not that I ever thought he'd do anything, but still.
Yeah. Well, you know, I always say this about human beings. We're an incredibly adaptable and resilient species. In the business world, adaptable is something to really pay attention to, because we morph into, we behave differently in different environments, and we morph into what the environment expects of us quite a bit of the time. It's just like an inclination we've got that we're that adaptive. And so, you know, I have this little saying, I say, if you want engagement, you must engage. You know, it's like people expect the employees to be the ones engaging themselves. No. You need to draw them. Like, you need to, I mean, and this is another thing I say all the time. You don't know where people have been. You don't know how they were raised. You don't know what their teachers were like. You don't know what their early bosses were like. And so you have this organization with all these adults with all kinds of baggage from all kinds of places. And in order to get an environment that really thrives and is clarity laced and clarity thinking all the time, you have to create an incredibly safe space for all that clarity to emerge. And every leader has to be on board. It's a tall order, you know, mm-hmm. to really create that kind of an environment. And it takes a very strong and compelling CEO to create that leadership team. And some people may need to go. If that's what you want to create, there may be some people there that are never going to embrace clarity, and they won't belong there. And so it's a, you know, all these people come in with all this baggage, and we have to keep remembering that they didn't just magically become a human being when they walked through your door as an organization, you know?
Right. Right. And you're right. I mean, humans, when you think about it, is infinitely variable, and it could be as little as, you know, I got cut off on the way to work this morning. I was in a great mood and somebody cut me off and flipped me the bird out the window. And now I'm in a bad mood. You know, there's a bazillion things that, mm-hmm. you know, I always just say, I borrow a quote from Ross Perot, anyone smart enough to do this job wouldn't want it. Right. It's like,
that's a good one.
It's, yeah, that's why it stuck with me for so long. Yeah, but because it sometimes it does feel true, you know, it's like, yeah, golly, you know, you could do everything right, you know, and still come up with a different result than the last time. You'd be like, I've sat at my desk before thinking, yeah, I did the exact same thing 2 weeks ago and I got this result versus this one. And they are opposite ends of the spectrum. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's so situational, everything. You know, there was a woman I was coaching, and we were problem solving coaching. She was working on a really cool project, and she was great at doing her homework. Like, I'd give her all this homework to, you know, go figure out, and then we'd have another coaching session. She'd come back, and there was one thing she was not doing, like three sessions in a row, she hadn't done this. And it was going to these other departments that were a peer level and asking for their input on something. And I finally said, okay, I just have to be Pittsburgh for a moment. And what I mean by that is being very frank and very direct. Like, what's up with that? Like, why are you not doing this? You're getting everything else done. Like, what is in your way? And she didn't know, or she said she didn't know in the beginning. And I said, well, keep thinking. I mean, there's something in your way. What is it? You know, and kept asking some questions. And she said, oh my goodness. I said, what? She said, my last boss, every time I wanted to engage other departments, he'd tell me no. He would tell me, no, we can't let them know about that. Like, we need to fix it ourselves. And he was very, you know, insecure about help, asking for help. And who knows where he came from and why that was, but it was what it was. And she adapted. And so I said to her, what can you do about that? Now you're in a different company. You have a different boss. What can you do with this? She's like, I don't know. And she said, I just don't feel comfortable going and asking them. I said, well, okay, what could you do first? You know, and finally she, you know, understood she could go ask this boss how he feels about that. Like, is he cool with her going out and asking all the peers, you know, to weigh in on something? Is that how he rolls? You know, mm-hmm. And sure enough, she asked him, he's like, oh yeah, absolutely. I expect that. And so the shackles were off at that point for her, and she was freed. And hopefully, I don't know if she's still there or not, but hopefully if she's moved on, she's taken that freed shackle thing with her, you know, and hopefully she's not getting beaten down again by another insecure boss.
Yeah. And that's so counterproductive, and mm-hmm. that's, you know, we don't have enough time to get into the inner office politics discussion, but
yeah,
I've had bosses like that too, where it's like, no, we handle it in the family and you don't say a word, and, you know, and hiding things. There was another time we had a project manager, we were working on a project for a large agricultural customer, and that customer pushed the timeline out, mm-hmm. And it, not my engineer, but the design engineer found out about it. And she accidentally mentioned it to my manufacturing engineer. And she's like, oh yeah, so-and-so, you know, they pushed it out by like a month. And then she goes, oh, I wasn't supposed to tell you that. And I'm like, so then it gets back to me. And I'm like, so I go to see the project manager. I'm like, why is this a secret? Like, we're all employed by the same company. He's like, well, I didn't want you to take, you know, your engineer off the project. And I'm like, so you lie to me and everybody else?
Manipulative.
I'm like, are we not on the same team? And he was wildly unapologetic. He's just like, I'm like, anyways, that was his deal. You know, that guy he was not a good dude. But, you know, to your point, it's like, let's share. That's why I've never been a big, you know, if you have a project, right, and you need something by Friday, I've never been a big fan of saying, well, I need it by Wednesday or the end of close a bit, you know, or whatever.
Right.
To give air quotes, give yourself a buffer. It's like, no, I need it by, give me 2:00 on Friday. That'll give me a chance to whatever, do what I need to do. Mm-hmm. And I'll email it out because that's actually when it's due. It always drove me nuts. Anytime I had a boss that would, you know, I had a boss once that I had to get somebody to move their office because they were doing some renovations or something. So I literally, he's like, I need it done by the end of the week. So I pulled a guy off of the machine that he runs, have him clean up his debt, move his whole area. That his area sat vacant for like a month and a half after that. And I'm like, why was this a big deal? Like, why did, you know? And he's like, well, I had to make sure it got done. I'm like, for crying out loud, you know, stuff like that, you know?
Well, and that's when you have to have a very tiered leadership alignment around clarity, embracing clarity for it to really emerge, because you can't have one person operating that way and expect the organization to be able to really get there. And again, back to a little thing I said a minute ago, like, you know, leadership, if someone's very serious about transformation, there's almost always someone on the senior leadership team that is just not going to cut it. They just don't have the disposition, the appetite, the wherewithal, whatever it might be, to lead that way. So now you need to give them a fair shot at changing, you know, and getting the appetite and the bug and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, if they don't, you really can't keep someone around like that because they'll keep poisoning the well.
Yeah.
So,
and I'll tell you, I always get a little bit of inquisitive looks when I say stuff like that. There's a workshop I've given and several times about workforce engagement. And I talk about just that, where, you know, if you assume a normal distribution that you're always going to have, I call them dissenters. I'm like, you're always going to have somebody over on some folks on the tail end. Some of those people will be your biggest proponents when you win them over. Absolutely. There's other people will never, ever, ever come over ever. And you might have to get rid of them. And I've had people ask me, are you saying we should fire people? Because I thought Lean said, don't fire anybody. And I'm like, to your point, you got to give them a chance. And sometimes it takes four or five chances, but at a certain point, you got to make the call and say, if you're not coming along, I can't have you along, you know, cause you're gonna, right. You're holding us back.
Yeah. When Jim Collins talked about the right people on the bus, I don't think he was saying, you know, do a survey and, you know, take all the people that immediately don't seem to fit and get them off. You know, I think it was, you know, get the right people on the bus with love and kindness. And, you know, and make sure that you've given everyone a fair shot to really get with the program. You know, I have a colleague that, so let's talk about middle managers for a moment. To me, they're in the most difficult role in an organization. They've got a lot of responsibility and not a lot of power. And, you know, this colleague of mine just would not include middle managers in any of his work he did with clients. In any team, no matter what it was either executives or front lines. And I just don't think that's the way to work. I mean, it's one thing if an organization intentionally wants to try to go very flat, although I have not seen very flat work really well anywhere. And so you do need a buffer between the front lines and senior leaders that can really kind of go back and forth between those levels. I think so anyway. And so, you know, you have to make sure that everyone is given that fair shake to be part of what you're trying to create. But then to your point, you know, if they're given a really good fair shake and it's a real fair shake, not a fake fair shake, you know, then, you know, it's time to find a different person that will go along with what you're trying to create.
Yeah. And it is a tough call. I mean, yeah. You know, it's never easy. We have clients that we've helped go through stuff like that.
Yeah.
And
yeah, we do regularly also,
you know, and they're all better off. They are, you know, and sometimes we're, you know, I won't say it was easier than other times, but sometimes it was just blatant. Like sometimes it's borderline. We all think maybe this person's trying to get fired or laid off for whatever reason, but then there's other times it's like, you know, it's not a judgment call on you or your, you know, it's like, we like you, but it's, you can't get over this thing. And it's, you know, we've given you 100 times, you know, but.
Yeah. And I think usually when people are kept on, the reason why, even though everyone around is saying, like, can't we just do something? It's usually because they're technically incredibly good at their jobs and very smart and things like that. And the behavior and personality quirks, as they were, are allowed to continue because of that technical competence. And it's you need both.
Right. Yeah. And that's just it. Right.
You need
that's
both.
Just it.
Yeah.
So Karen, I do like to take a little break from the regular scheduled program and play something I call the Wicked Fun part, if you're up for it.
Yes, I am, of course.
All right. Here we go.
All right.
What was the last gift you gave someone?
It was a bracelet to my mom.
Ah.
Mother's Day.
Oh, well, there you go.
Just passed. Yes.
Nice. What's the funniest thing that's happened to you recently?
Well, I have a Zoom story. Everyone has funny Zoom stories, but I have a Zoom story that was pretty funny. So brand new client, you know, just getting to know them in another country. And we were having one of our first calls. It was just he and I initially, just to figure out scope for the engagement and everything. And I saw him kind of like doing something with his arm. I couldn't quite figure out what he was doing. And all of a sudden I'm like, oh, he's swatting something away, you know, and he kept doing this and this and, you know, kept talking and everything. And all of a sudden I heard, you know, and I could tell it was a child. And I was like, oh, I hear a child. He's like, oh, I'm sorry. You know, and he's trying so hard to be like the big executive, you know, and I said, no, that's okay. Let me see, you know, put him on your lap.
Yeah.
And so he brings the kid up on his lap and the kid looks right in the camera and goes, Mama. And I was like, oh, and he got really red, the CEO, you know, and I think I got red too. And then what was really funny about it, we had our first executive meeting, team meeting, and everyone introduced themselves and everything. And after the meeting, I was talking to the VP of sales. I forget which one it was. And he let me know that the mother of the kid is on the executive team. And so it was just one of the, and I don't look anything like her, not our hair is different color. It was funny, but it was just, he was so embarrassed. And I thought that was a cute Zoom thing.
That's, yeah, I like that story a lot because, you know, it is funny that we all, you know, like this is where my office, like I don't use a virtual background, you know, you don't see my book, you know, or, you know, it's like, it is what it is. I don't know.
Your medals back there. There's a lot of awards I see.
Yeah. Those are, I run obstacle course races, so I've done that for a lot of years. So that's some of what I've, yeah.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, those are
you run obstacle course races every day of work. It's interesting. You also like literally run obstacle course races.
Mm-hmm. That's what I do for fun. And thankfully, this year I only got to run one last year. Only one went live. A lot of them were virtual, which I didn't do. But this year it looks like they're kind of opening all back up. Yeah. So I'm excited.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah. So we'll get muddy.
Yeah. Good.
How about ooh, this one would be a good one for you. What keeps you up at night?
Just the million details to manage. You know, two companies, employees, clients, online learning. You know, it's just, there's so many details. Thankfully, I'm a list person. So I'm like always keeping my list and checking it off and everything. But I wake up, I mean, one of the lovely things about aging is that most of the time I go to sleep right away because I'm just beat. But I wake up and then I have a hard time going back to sleep. And it's usually because my mind starts and I start thinking about the million little details. And so it's, you know, it literally is the list of things that aren't done that I wish were done. And that's what keeps me up at night.
Same.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. I know before I go to bed, if I'm going to wake up at 4 a.m. because even if a lot of times I'll have a list right on my nightstand. And that's me trying to get it out of my head so it doesn't wake me up. But I know if I have a big presentation or something, I'm like, I don't even set my alarm. I'm like, I'm going to be up at 4 a.m. It's like on the nose. Crazy.
Well, now you're acting like 4 a.m. is unusual. See, I'm up at 4 a.m. regularly because I have clients in Europe.
Ah.
And so we have these calls, you know, at the crack of dawn.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I was raised by a farmer. So I'm an early morning person anyway.
There you go. That'll do it.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So I'm going to hit you with the ones that I know you're going to be ready for because we were chatting before we got on that. So you're an Inside the Actors Guild fan like I was.
Yes.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
It's a tie between singing and dancing.
Ooh.
Actually, no, wait, what am I saying? Oh, interior design. I love interior design, but I want to sing and dance too. So I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, you can do both. You can be a singing, dancing, interior designer.
Yeah, that would be good.
How about what profession would you not like to do?
Accounting. Policing. You only asked for one, though.
That's okay. You can keep going.
I actually love reconciling my checking accounts, but I don't want to do that all the time.
Mm.
That sounds really boring to me.
The balance sheets always got me, which is silly because it just has to come out even. But for the life of me,
yeah,
I could not get them to balance. So I'm like, nope. That's what we have QuickBooks for.
To be honest, I still don't get that. I shouldn't be admitting this publicly. I still don't get the balance sheet. Like, I look at my P&L all the time, and it, you know, it really helps to look at it all the time. And I look at it for different reasons other than what my profit is. I look at it to look at, you know, different categories of expenses and things like that. The balance sheet, I just don't really understand why that matters. I mean, it balances. It always balances.
Right. And that was to me too.
But yours didn't, huh?
Yeah. Well, as an engineer, I don't know. It was just me or what. But it just didn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense to me either. I never said that publicly. I'm so glad to hear that it doesn't make sense to you either.
Nope.
I mean, 0-0, I got it, but so what?
Right, exactly. And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, savings is a debit? What? Or so whatever it is. I'm like, whatever. I left that long ago. I'm like, I'm never going to get this and I don't care. So
yeah, I've never asked a client for a balance sheet. Ever.
Yeah, me neither. Me neither. What sound or noise do you love?
Okay, so I actually have a couple. I love the sound of movement. And by that, I mean airplanes, buses, and trains. Like, I love this. And I didn't know that I had this until like maybe 10 years ago. I've always loved it, but I never put it together that it's movement, like action or, you know, going somewhere, getting some progress, you know, that type of thing. I also love the sound of water. Like, I love like waves lapping on a lake. I love ocean waves, a stream trickling. Like, I love the sound of water. I love the sound of a cat purring. I think that's a really calming kind of sound. So that's a bunch of different ones.
Okay. All right.
I don't ever have one answer.
That's okay. You can do whatever you want.
Okay.
Last one. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear St. Peter say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Yeah, I knew that this was one of James Lipton's questions. I actually don't have a good answer for it. You done all right, girl? Something like that? Something really down home, maybe?
Fair.
I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see. Whatever. I'll take anything.
Yeah.
Thank you, St. Peter. Yeah.
Right. Hey.
Yeah.
All right, Karen, we got a few minutes left. Is there anything, any special announcements? Do you have book number 6 in the works? Or?
No, I think I'm doing all my writing with the courses right now. So I just don't have the bandwidth to do. I do have books in my head, but I don't know when I'll get to that. It kind of depends on, you know, whether or not I don't know what's going to happen with books. No, I think, you know, I'm splitting my time between the academy and consulting, and I love both. And so we have a lot of new things that we're thinking about for the academy that are, you know, product development kinds of things. Consulting, it's pretty much just the same thing, you know, we've done, only every client, of course, is very different. So I love that. So no, actually, it's just a lot of work and nothing earth-shattering on the horizon. I'm not going to say. Yeah, there's one thing that is I'm really excited about for the academy, but I'm not going to say yet.
All right. Well, maybe
I can't say.
Maybe the season 3 opener. We can.
Maybe
in time, and we can do it then.
Yeah. Okay, that's a deal.
All right. Fair enough. Well, Karen, thank you again so much.
Thank you, Paul. This is really fun. It's been fun getting to know you and trading stories and things like that. And you're a great podcast host. Your questions are great.
Thank you. Yeah. I've gotten better. Katie Anderson, which I know you know, was our first guest. And I almost feel bad. I almost want to email her and be like, I'm sorry. That was so clunky.
Well, you know, PDSA, baby. And you can always do redos. You know, Katie Anderson 2.0.
That's true. I might actually do that and have her come back and...
Yeah.
All right. Now that I'm a little bit better and kind of a little more polished, because again, you know, this is my COVID project. So I'm sitting here. I'm like, what can I do? You know? Yeah. So I'm like, I've always wanted to try it. So.
Yeah. And besides that, I don't know when you interviewed her, but she's been doing so many interviews for her fantastic book that, you know, she too is probably, you know, the queen of PDSA.
Right.
PDA. Yeah.
No kidding.
So, I'd love to hear that.
Cool. Well, I'll reach out.
All right.
All right, Karen, I'll let you go.
All right. Thank you so much, Paul. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you too. See ya.
Bye-bye.